Bam.
There that it is, was guys. Cool. That was cool. I like that. Yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
That was pretty cool. I was rocking out here.
Well, we would like to take credit for that, but that was actually all done by Greenline Morse. He's our technical producer and does all that fancy stuff for us. So yeah. Big shout out to Jay from Greenline.
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of talented people in this game. You know, not just in breeding snakes, right?
Right.
When you think about
all various talents coming together with the passion of snakes, kind of pulling it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. That is cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, welcome to the show, Mark, Reptiles Unplugged. Welcome, everybody. We really appreciate you all tuning in tonight. This is our big kickoff kind of interview coming back. Mark, I don't know, like Joel and I from State 48 used to run this show several years ago, and then we took a hiatus. He's doing school. I was doing some other stuff, and recently Shane kind of and I were talking, and he was asking if I ever thought about bringing it back, and so we both kind of agreed we would do it with each other, and we're honored that you are like our first official interview on the channel again, that we've come back. So
yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, man, big honor. I do apologize though, the closest Canadian breeder shirt.
No, I noticed had, that what
Well, yeah. I didn't have a Marcus Jane.
You know? No. Sorry, no, my logo is like this big on a shirt. It would just look like you spilt some orange juice on your white shirt, you know. Whereas RCR, Royal Canadian Reptiles, I know what he's doing right now. He's watching hockey.
Yeah, he probably is. I told him you were going to be on tonight, and he goes, well, you know. And then didn't finish the sentence. So.
Yeah, I'm watching hockey. Yeah, you can't do both at the same time.
That's okay. I understand.
Yeah, I don't even know how we're doing. We're in the playoffs of, you know, the game hockey that was invented in Canada, just so you know.
Okay. All right. Amazing.
As was football.
Really?
Yes.
Wait, football or football?
No, football. Football. Oh, okay. NFL football. Yeah. That football was invented at McGill University in Montreal. That's where it first came to be. Ask Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Okay. Next time I see Dave, I'll
he brought that to the surface to our attention during a Super Bowl. There was a commercial about all the things that Canada is responsible for. Egg cartons. Peanut butter.
Man, you guys aren't getting any credit for any.
No, we don't. No.
This is complete horse crap, man.
It has to do with the fact of our neighbors. Our neighbors keep on taking all the credit for everything.
Well, as long as we keep passing it down south, right? We just keep passing the buck down south. It'll end someplace. Yeah. Antarctica, I'm sure, is responsible for all.
The nice thing is, after we invent it, it becomes our neighbors and it becomes the best game. The best, the biggest, the hugest. Just like tonight, more people are watching this than anybody in the history of the world.
Man, your impression is spot on.
No, it's not. It's terrible.
Come on, chat. Terrible. Let's hear it. Who was that impression? Can anybody name it for us?
Yeah, well.
Oh, I love it, man. I love the energy you bring in. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's Thursday? Thursday night. Thursday.
Yeah.
I just took a drive with my lovely wife, Jane. Shane knows Jane. We drove down to the lake and we went and there's a place called the Schnitzel Shack.
Okay.
And they make, do you know what schnitzel is?
Yeah, there was one here in town. Okay. Tell me about it though.
Like Wiener Schnitzel is like pounded sausage, pork.
Right? Yeah.
No, pounded pork, breaded, deep fried, and put on a sandwich. And it was like that big. It was huge.
Man.
It was huge.
Nice.
Hugest schnitzel you've ever seen. Anyway. used to be a pickup line when I was in high school.
You used to be what? It cut out. Sorry. What'd you say?
Be a pickup line in high school. You want to see my huge schnitzel?
Oh, gotcha.
I knew what that meant. It meant sandwich. Sandwich. And Shane will attest. Have I not made you a sandwich?
Best sandwich I've ever had. I mean, the vegetables were from the garden. The bread was homemade. I mean, it was just like so much wondrous. It was the best food I had in Canada. And that, I even went to St. Lawrence Market too.
Yeah.
I would take Mark's sandwich over what I had there.
I would too.
I have heard that about you, Mark.
I'm very humble.
Yeah.
No, I love to cook. I love to cook for people. I just went to a concert last Saturday, and the band is called Brit Floyd, and I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, as you can see behind me.
Yeah.
There's Dark Side of the Moon, yeah. Division Bell. And I know a few of the members of the band just by being on their Facebook group and blah, blah, blah. And I ended up actually cooking for them and making them because, you know, road food, you're on the road. It's always the same. And I ended up cooking for them. And they invited my wife and I and our daughter backstage after the
awesome.
Show. And I met Harry Waters, who is the son of Roger Waters. Was playing with him that night. So
that's pretty cool.
And you're sitting there going, who's Roger Waters?
Yeah. Fill us in.
Well, there were four members of Pink Floyd, Roger Waters, David Gilmour, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright. And
you're amazing, man. I love the music. I don't have a memory like that, unfortunately, where like, I can't. Yeah. My memory doesn't work like that. So,
well, I'm 68 and I got to keep my memory going, right?
Right.
You got to. Yeah. So I find, are we here to talk about snakes or?
Yeah, eventually.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that.
You know,
I love music history, right? I mean, I can either listen to podcasts about, you know, politics or, you know, shit going on. But I have a tendency to listen to more about, I'll listen to books about music and different bands and, you know, different things that happen along the way. I find that kind of stuff fascinating because, I mean, tonight you said you wanted to talk to me about being in the industry 25 years. Well, you know, when you look at bands like Pink Floyd, who were in for a long time, they weren't together that long, you know, but their music has lived on for a long time. So I think it's relevant to learn because you learn things from all kinds of people from all kinds of walks of life and the struggles and the ups and downs and the perseverance and so on. And that's what we do, right?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's parallels if you are aware out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, kind of the tie the two in. What do you think the secret sauce to Pink Floyd's success? Why did they last so long? Was it reinventing? Was it a new sound? What do you think?
Well, you know, if you look at how long they lasted, I think they started in something like 67. And actually the guy, the founding member was Sid Barrett. And Sid Barrett was the principal guitar player, the songwriter, the singer. Roger Waters was a bass player and he would, you know, back up sing or whatever, but it was Nick Mason, Sid Barrett, Richard Wright, and Roger Waters. And Sid had a bit of a problem with psychedelics, especially LSD. And he was constantly on LSD. Now, he was a genius, but he was riding that fine line of genius and insanity, right?
Right.
And it got to the point where he was he would stand on stage and just wander around stage, and the rest of the band were going, you know, what's going on? You know, we got to get another guitar player in. So they found this young guitar player who was actually a friend of Sid's named David Gilmour. David Gilmour, in my opinion, is the greatest guitarist of all time because of his sound, his unique sound. When Wish You Were Here was about Barrett. Absolutely. 100% Wish You Were Here. And Shine On You Crazy Diamond. Right. I'm seeing the messages in 319 Reptiles. Am I boring anybody out there? Just give me a thumbs up, thumbs down. So anyways, they eventually, Roger Waters said, you know, we can't do this. We're going to get rid of you. David Gilmour was a brilliant guitarist, and they released a few albums, but their claim to fame, what really, really launched them into superstardom was Dark Side of the Moon. And Dark Side of the Moon was a lot about Sid Barrett. The principal songwriter felt, Roger Waters, felt guilt for kicking him out of the band. But then they had both of them, Gilmour and Waters, were basically put into the position of they had to sing and they had to write songs. Sid Barrett was the guy doing it. So now you've got a whole new reinvented band, but they came out with Dark Side of the Moon, which never went to number one in England. It only went to number two, believe it or not. But it's
really,
it's the longest standing album in the top 100 in the history of the world. And absolutely brilliant, brilliant album.
I mean, the first time I ever listened to it, I do remember being mind blown. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I was my early teens and it was just like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah. And it's not elevator music. It is something that you need to immerse yourself in. You put it on and you play it from beginning to end because there's a theme all the way through. So if you listen to some of the songs that they wrote, now Dark Side is 52 years ago. 52 years ago.
Wow.
Where they were then, okay, and how innovative they were with their sound and everything like that, which a lot of that had to do with a young engineer that was given the task to engineer this album for this, you know, group called Pink Floyd, and he said, yeah, I'll do it. And his name was Alan Parsons. And I don't know if you know ever heard of Alan Parsons, but you should know who he is because he was a musical genius and went on to do his own stuff.
Man, like I said, I'm horrible with certain names. I'm sure if, like you said, okay, this song or this band he was instrumental in helping produce, I'd be like, oh, I've listened to that and loved it.
Well, the Alan Parsons Project.
Okay.
Yes.
If you've watched a basketball game, you've heard Alan Parsons because they play his music a lot in the NBA. It's pretty good music. So
yeah.
Anyway, what are we going to talk about tonight, guys?
Shane, I'll let you
continue. Snakes. We're going to talk about snakes.
Snakes.
It's fun. It's funny that you bring up Pink Floyd because, like, Dark Side of the Moon, that's like a timeless album, right?
Oh,
that's
kind of like,
that's kind of the feeling I got when I went to your house and you were showing me snake after snake. And it was just all of these beautiful things. And I was curious then, I figured this would be a good thing to have you on the podcast about. Was that like a vision you had in the beginning? Like, everything was smooth, clean. Orange, do you have like a strategy when you're stacking jeans? Did it all just happen on accident? Tell me all the things, Mark.
Well, you know, going back then, we didn't have a lot to work with. The first morph I worked with was a pastel, known as a pastel jungle. Back then, I just sent a snake to Craig from Bashcoder. And he read the ID. He says, I can't figure out what PJ stands for. I said, pastel jungle. And he said, is jungle a separate? And I said, no, it was all one thing back then, pastel jungle. And then it got just they dropped the jungle bit. I didn't, because I like every gene in an ID number or code to have two letters. Okay, so Azanthic is AX, Pastel Jungle is PJ, you know, Black All right. Pastel is BP, so yeah. on. So I, you know, Clown is CL. So yeah, you know, that's what I had to work with. Now, they did have albinos, they did have piebalds, they had caramel albinos, but everything was super expensive. I mean, I think albinos at one point, you know, just a het was $10,000 for a het male, you know, and the whole idea was you would make other, you know, normal looking snakes and 50% of them would be het. So it would get you into the race. Right. And, so, you know, it was always about gravitating towards what I liked, not what other people liked. It was what I liked. And I always was drawn to the color orange. I just really liked that color. And I think I like that color is because it gives me comfort. And the reason it gives me comfort is because it is the principal color in a fire. And if you were to take any human being, and in particular men, fire has special meaning to them. It is the oldest thing we know is fire. Fire is what allowed us to expand, to grow our populations, to move to other parts of the world, to explore, to discover new lands, right? Fire.
Right.
And, you know, and fire had a lot to do with, obviously, the next big thing that happened was the Industrial Revolution, which was as a result of the steam engine, right?
Right.
So anyways, the comfort in fire, you put people around a fire pit, all those people will have a conversation, but they'll all be staring at the fire.
Right. Memorized. Right. By the fire. Yeah. Yeah.
They're mesmerized. And now you light up a barbecue and you throw a big steak on there. You got a whole new game. Right. But it's still fire. Right. So that's why I went with orange. And also the snake that really grabbed my attention were caramel albinos at the time.
Okay.
Because, you know, albinos were a big thing and whatever, but caramels were as well. And I just love caramels. And so when I did my original logo, which is very similar to this, but not with the orange background, the orange in the snake was eyedropped from Photoshop from a picture of a caramel. I used the orange from the caramel.
Oh, so really? Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of where the orange came from. And then, you know, from there it was, you know, the industry was ever expanding with so many more possibilities. But I always leaned towards snakes that really popped, that really stood out. Because back then I was doing a lot of shows here. And if you wanted to grab people's attention, you had to do it in a different way, because let's face it, back then and even today, to some extent, there's a lot of brown snakes on the table. And, you know, I found when I was going around looking at snakes, I would just skim, right? And if you're skimming and nothing stops you, then there's a problem. So right. I thought, you know, if I'm going to get people to stop and pay attention, I've got to put a lot of snakes on the table that's going to grab their attention. And bright colors, you know, the yellows and the oranges or whatever, do it. Now, in contrast to that, I accidentally produced Azanthix. At the time, I didn't know what line of Azanthix they were. And then I went on a quest to find out by, you know, purchasing all the different lines of Azanthix and breeding it to the Azanthix I had to see if I produced more Azanthix. And I didn't. Therefore, the MJ line was born. And those snakes are like what my bright snakes are, but just in black and white.
Right, monochromed out, right, right.
And, you know, black and white photography is beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? So now you've got the best of both worlds. So, you know, doing an art exhibit, which I feel I do, I try to do, with my snakes, with my display and whatever, I've now got, you know, the black and white portraits, and I've got the color portraits.
Right.
So
I've listened to you talk about that before, and you even organize your display in kind of like a visually pleasing way, right? Like, it's not chaos. There is an order to it of how you are placing stuff. There's a purpose.
Absolutely. Look, you know, everything is a journey, you know. In music, every song is a journey. Every album is a journey. It depends on the artist. But when I wanted people to step up to my table, it was a journey. It was an organized journey. And the journey was, no matter what end you start at, when you get to the middle, it's like,
boom.
Right. And I mean, and it's not just, you know, boom in the middle. It's like, as they're going along, they're going, oh, and then they get to the next section, and it is sectioned. Okay. There's a gap in between each section. And I do that on purpose just so it's not overwhelming.
Your eyes get a little rest almost. You know,
well, they get a rest, and it's easy to stop in one spot and just admire what it is. I mean, can you imagine? Okay, so if you took an art gallery or an art showing, you've seen them on, you know, different TV shows and this and that, whatever, where they go to this art gallery and there's a painting here and a painting there. Whatever. Can you imagine if everything on the wall was a painting?
Right, totally.
Right? Yeah. If you went to a jewelry store and it was just nonstop, every square inch, jewelry.
Right.
Watches, rings, whatever. You know, that's why Tiffany's is so, you know, does so well. Because they get it.
Right.
Right. When you go to a store like Louis Vuitton or Coach or whatever, it's not just wall-to-wall purses. It's purses here, purses there, purses whatever. And they get it. So, you know, every time I see examples of this, I try to adapt it into what I do.
Yeah. Ah, I love that, man. Yeah. I wish, you know, I like that. I'm going to take a lot of that to heart, actually. I don't vend shows much anymore, but I do recognize the importance of it. And it is something that I think I'm going to strive to kind of get back to doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that perspective on it, you know, and that kind of ties into even our breeding programs, right? Like,
absolutely. Yeah. Less is more. Right. I mean, I can't stress that enough. Less is more.
Right.
And
right.
I'm gonna go back. Sorry, people. I'm going back to music again. David Gilmour is one of the greatest guitar players that ever lived. But David Gilmour is the greatest because only David Gilmour plays like David Gilmour. And he's never in a rush. There's so much space between chords or notes or whatever you want to call them. The guitar player will correct me here in a second, but there's just no rush, you know, and that's what makes it so brilliant.
Right.
And that's the same thing. I don't want people rushing by. I want people, A, stopping, looking at everything, because everything is worthwhile looking at. And then when they leave, they talk about it. And the first person they encounter, they talk about it.
Right.
Okay. Because not everybody, I'd be a fool to think that everybody that walks by is going, could be a customer. Just never happens. Right.
Sure, right.
So if they don't buy it, let them buy into it.
It's a great way of looking at it. Right.
Yeah. I bought in because I met Mark at a show and seen his setup. And as soon as I came home, I changed the way my whole setup looked like. I was just like, that's it. I'm changing my whole, I talked to Mark for a whole bunch, but just a couple minutes talking to him. And I was like, my whole philosophy's changed. I'm changing the way my whole setup looks. Like, it's got to go. Throw away all the old stuff, change it.
Nice, man. And have you noticed? So that's kind of cool, right? You were doing it one way. You heard the advice, you implemented it. And what did you see in the results from people? Did you actually see more engagement, like people stopping by and, you know, that type of thing?
Yeah, I absolutely do in my case. So like Mark is orange and white. I'm red with white. And like in a sea of black, you can't miss where I'm at. I'm just like a beacon of red over there. And people right. stop by and it's like, wow, this is very clean. It's different. It stands out. And I owe all that to Mark. So yeah. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, you want people from across the hall to look over and go, yeah, that's Shane, Small Town Exotics, right?
Right.
And it's good. Yeah.
But Mark's got me beat because he makes the brightest orangish snakes that go that match his whole setup. Which kind of leads me into a question. How do you go about like your gene stacking and your combos? Because I would say you also take the less is more approach with that too.
Well, yeah. I think again, the more genes you stack on, it's like paint. You know, if you put all the paints together and mix them up, you get a dull color.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I think the talent is being able to produce a 2-gene or 3-gene snake that really stands out. It's not in producing a 5-gene. And trust me, I have nothing against 5-gene snakes. But if you can make a popper out of 3 genes, you're good. Right.
Right.
But if you need 6 genes to do it, well, I don't think there's as much, talent in that. In making a.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Somebody earlier, I was trying to find the comment row. Oh, here it is. The bonfire combo popped for sure. Black Pastel, Inchy Calico, right? And Spider. So that's, I think, the perfect kind of example of that is just finding the right combos to go with each other. More isn't always better. Less typically equals more. And it's not all about recessives either. We have to find the beauty incomplete dominant traits, right? And don't really chase everybody else's vision is kind of also how I look at this, right? Like look to others for clues and then try and come up with it yourself, right? And throw your own spin on it.
And if you're seeing a certain combo, so it's like... if you put a chili into something you're cooking, okay, a chili flake or a hot pepper or whatever, you know, there's different types of hot, right? There's different types of peppers. There's different whatever you can put in there. So if you see, somebody doing something with black pastel that really pops as a result of being, crossed with this orange snake or whatever, then maybe try it with another dark gene. try it with chocolate, try it with blackhead. Mahogany, blackhead, right. You know, so that you're a little bit different from that person. But, you know, I'm a big believer in choosing a lane, and not just choosing a lane, but maybe getting off the highway and choosing a different route that gives you, there's less pressure, there's less chance you're going to get into a wreck, and the scenery's better.
Right.
And it might not get you there as fast, but when you get there, you're going to be a better person for taking that route. And, you know, all you have to do is, you know, come up with one or two really kick-ass snakes to make a name for yourself.
Right.
Because people don't look at the name. They look at the snake, then they look at the name.
Right.
Always.
And that's the way it should be, right? What we're doing, the animals are the highlight, are the star of the show, right?
Absolutely.
As the breeders, we're just kind of here along for the ride and the curate, but really it's them that's doing it. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. They are definitely the show. And I find, you know, I mean, I do quite a few podcasts or whatever, but I find some people in this industry has more to do with them being the celebrity as opposed to their snakes being the celebrities. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, you know, some of those people do very, very well. But I would rather the snakes be, you know, the celebrity of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. Like you said, like, hey, I'm not looking down on anybody. There are people that are very talented at having people just drawn to them. Right. And
absolutely.
I cheer that. Right. But at the same time, right, I'm a little bit more, I kind of like to say, hey, this is what I've done. This is the animal I'm speaking about, and not make it so much about me per se, you know?
For sure. Hey guys, I got a heater. I'm in the basement, so I'm just going to.
Right on. Yeah. Do your deal, man. Do your deal.
I just kicked it over. So if you see smoke in a minute, it's not a smoke show. Right. It's not a laser. It's not a laser show.
We're going to wait for the, you're not going to bust out the guitar next and start going.
The sprinklers go off. I'm not doing a wet t-shirt contest. Okay. I'm just saying.
We're not monetized yet, so we don't have super chats, or I'd really be able to.
It'd be a total waste of time.
It'd be a total waste. Too funny. So, you know, interesting question that kind of popped into my mind while you were talking about, you know, bringing in like Pastel Jungle and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Graziani was calling them that. And that's who I got it from. And then in the forums, it started shifting, right? Because it was quicker to type Pastel than Pastel Jungle.
And then
the jungle, actually, somebody kind of came out with the jungle. And everyone's like, what's that? I think it turned out to be a polygenetic trait that didn't turn out to be anything. Yeah. And then by that point, it was solidified. Pastel is just Pastel. I do kind of remember that. Do you have any of those originating animals?
No.
Like, no?
No.
None of them at all? Okay.
That was 25 years ago.
Right? Have they either passed, or did you sell all of them as you
I sold most of them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, right on. Yeah. I was wondering. I still have my first ball python that I bought, and he's, let's see, almost 15 years now.
So wow.
He's ticking along. Pastel, you know, nothing fancy, but he'll always stay with me. He doesn't get bred. He gets fed good, you know. Yeah. He just lives a good life. So
I think the oldest snake I have is from 2009, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a good time too. Yeah. So that's 16 years.
Don't use it anymore for anything. It's just, she's a big old girl. So
yeah, you know, it's sometimes I look at it and I'm like, well, I have to remember all the sentimental value that mm-hmm. like these animals bring in, and that kind of keeps me going as well. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Not that they have a breeding purpose, but for me, opening that tub, seeing him, and being like, "Oh man, we've had a lot." You know, we yeah. went through a lot together, basically. You know, it's
well, you know, they all have personalities. Yeah. Every single one of them have a yep. personality, and some, you know, they're so predictable. How they're going to behave on a feeding day or something like that. And, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun with them. Yeah.
I like, that's why I have these guys actually behind me, the Retex. That's a super dwarf and the
okay.
as well.
Okay.
But that's what I really, really enjoy with these guys is their personality and how inquisitive they are. Like you, they know it's feeding day. They know the difference. You know, if I open it and kind of show them the hook, they realize, oh, it's not feeding, and they turn down.
Wow.
Then, yeah, it's a very, very cool species to work with. And the ball pythons too, like you said, they do have their
individual
personality. They're a little more like three stage though, you know. Feeding, breeding, leave me alone.
I get some that they just want to crawl out, and you know, they're very explore. Cool about it and casual. You know, they'll explore, but you know,
totally.
It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what else we got, Shane? I know you had some pretty good stuff that we spoke about before. So,
are we still on snakes, or are we going to market?
Yeah, whatever you want to talk about.
All right. I want to talk about market. You've been mm-hmm. around for a minute, Mark. So mm-hmm. In all your times in here, you've seen the market go up and down, up and mm-hmm. down. Like, what's some of the strategies you use to just stay afloat and stay going?
I think spending less time on social media and spending more time with my animals, doing my thing, not letting, what's going on out there dictate what I do. Now, in fairness, I am breeding less now than I was. I mean, at the peak, I was getting up about 1 year, I did 148 clutches. Then the following year, 120 clutches. This year, I hope to do 50. Last year, I did 66.
Okay.
So this year, I'm hoping to do 50. And just because, you know, with the pairings I'm doing, you're getting more quality animals as a result of those pairings than you were, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I think with so many people in it, it's more of a responsible thing to do, you know, to not oversaturate the market. And so, you know, the worst thing you can do as a breeder is to say, hey, if I get 10 clutches and I get an average of 6 eggs per clutch and I sell on average those snakes are what now if I do 50 clutches or I do 100 clutches, I'm going to make, you know, 10 times as much money. That never happens. It doesn't, because there's so many things, you know, they're unpredictable. You can breed 100 females and get 20 clutches. You could breed 100 females and get 80 clutches. They're not like mammals that you can, you know, you breed them the day before they ovulate, like horses, for example, or dogs or whatever. You know where they are in their heat cycle. So if you breed them, you've got a pretty good chance of, you know, getting them to be pregnant. With snakes, we just don't know. We're you know, our expertise will tell us the signs or whatever. But, you know, to this day, so many people do it differently than everybody else. You know, I do not wait until a female produces follicles before I breed her. I breed her in order for her to produce follicles. It green lights the follicular growth, in my opinion. And I know, so if I have a wall of 100 snakes and I breed 50 of them. And then I ultrasound all 100 of those snakes a month after I bred. I will see follicles only in the ones I bred. Very, very rarely will I actually see, you know, 1.5 centimeter follicles or 15 millimeter follicles in females. I did not.
You haven't introduced yet. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what I do. I breed and then I ultrasound. So I'll ultrasound 30 days after and see if there's any activity. And if they're, you know, sitting at just 1 or 10 millimeters, I might breed them another time. But, you know, if they have been bred and the male stays in for 4 or 5 days, so they party pretty good.
Right.
And then I take them out. And so if it doesn't get done then, it's not going to happen as far as them going, okay, I'm now going to use my body fats and energy and this and that in order to grow these follicles. It's a green light.
Right. For the male, do you, when you pull, feed and then give a specific rest period? You know, how quickly would you repair him?
So usually a week later, like okay. five to seven days later.
I'll, so like after one that. Feeding and then a couple yeah. days, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Michael Graham, introduce to induce.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. There you go.
It's a shirt. It's a shirt slogan.
Yeah. 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 I used to wear that in the bars when I used to go.
That's what I was going to say. Be careful where you wear that one.
Yeah.
Cool. With you pairing less, what is your strategy to those pairings? Is it like pairings to move certain projects along or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, to move certain projects along to produce, you know, future breeders. I mean, everybody's into, you know, the triples and the quads and whatever. It's a lot of work, you know, to produce a quad or a triple and raise them up and then hopefully hit,
right?
You know,
right.
to get it. But, and then, you know, I breed for the market that is looking for a kick-ass, beautiful pet snake for $1,000, right?
Right.
And that market exists big time.
Right.
That's the market we, as an industry, should be chasing. Because, you know, there's a lot more people out there that would be open to keeping a beautiful snake as opposed to getting into the breeding game.
Right. I agree with that. Right? It makes more sense to breed for beautiful snakes that pretty much anybody off the street would agree or, you know, have a hard time disagreeing that it's not a cool color or something like that than breeding for breeders. Right. I mean,
yeah,
you know, through our own projects and stuff like that, we will produce animals that other breeders would want to buy. But yeah, I like that perspective.
Yeah, you've got to cover all parts of your market. And that's even, you know, getting back to the display at the show, the ends. So if you start from the right or you start from the left, you know, going down the table, the more inexpensive snakes are at the ends. And as you move towards the middle, they become more and more expensive.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Do you notice, I guess, so that like are more breeders kind of coming right up center to the table? Like, you know what I mean? And more pet people, do you think, are staying away?
Oh, no, no.
Sides?
No.
Or what is the strategy there?
I think breeders, you know, pretty much look at everything. And pet people, again, you know, it's like going to an art showing. sometimes they don't even know they want a snake until they see a particular snake. And sometimes they just get inspired, right? So Chris Eaton in the building.
Yeah, thanks for making it, Chris.
Well, while we're talking about all of this and mm-hmm. pricing and stuff, what's your view on slashing prices during the downturns? Is that helping us? Is that hurting us? I mean, you can't move animals. Is it right to slash prices? I mean, I've heard all kinds of different people talk about it different ways.
Well, I'm not a big fan of slashing prices because, you know, if you assume that soon as you post a snake, somebody's there to buy it, you're a fool. You know, first they got to find it, want it, and it has to be the right price. I think people are in a lot of rush to sell things, and that, again, is, you know, go slow. You know, slow and steady wins the race. Don't put yourself in a position where, oh my God, you know, I got to pay for all these rodents. I got to pay for all this bedding. I got to pay for all this, you know, don't do that to yourself. You know, one guy that produces, you know, 5 to 10 clutches, but it's really amazing stuff, can make an incredible name for himself. They exist out there.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because it's all based on quality. The one thing I don't like are auctions.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, let's talk about that.
I don't like auctions. And the reason I don't like auctions is because it's not like, you know, you have a set time where everybody shows up and everybody's going to see everything that is on auction. It's like, you know, a horse sale. I've been to many horse auctions. I've been to horse auctions where horses sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes millions of dollars. Okay. And the reason being is everybody in the industry that is in the industry interested in buying a horse are there at the same time. Okay. Whereas if you just have a, you know, you pop it on, and even if it's a 2-day, 3-day auction, you can't depend on the right people finding your snake at the right time to give you the right price for that snake.
Right.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I don't even look at the auctions. I just never do. Doesn't interest me. I don't care if I can get a snake for, you know, 25 cents on a dollar. I'm not interested in participating in auctions. And that's just me.
Yeah, that is interesting. I myself haven't really looked at them much either. I wasn't really buying a ton of animals right now. I'm very specific in what I'm looking for, and I know kind of who's making it, and I'll go talk with them about it. Right.
Yeah.
I'm kind of not at the point where I'm just kind of like, oh, let's see what's cheap. Oh, can I make that work? Can I make it fit, you know, and bring it in kind of thing, but I don't know. You know, I'm so split on it because I know that people utilize them to move animals. Right. And the animals do move.
Absolutely. Right? And they do move for pennies on the dollar.
Right. My question though is if you're getting in at kind of a lower price like that, do you respect the project? Are you what's your resale now going to be of the animals you produce with that?
Exactly. If the person goes into an auction and there's a snake that should be selling for $1,000 and he gets it for $200,
right?
Guess what they're going to be selling the offspring for? $100?
That's what I would have to assume, right?
Right.
Like that's,
right.
Yeah.
If that's the mentality, I want cheap, 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 everything cheap.
Right.
Tell that to some of the most successful companies in the world. Just go out there and manufacture cheap shit.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
In volume.
Right. Lots of it. As much as we can get in there. Right?
Make sure it breaks.
Quickly. You know? So we can resell it.
Yeah. So. No, well, and I mean, it works, you know, it works for some businesses. It works for some people. It's just not my deal.
Yeah.
My deal is I want to be known for quality, quality, quality. That's, you know, and when I say quality, I didn't use the word expensive.
Right.
Okay.
And I think that's important. It's very important to distinguish that, right?
Yeah.
Like dollar doesn't always equal quality, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of proof in the pudding is go look at some of these three gene incomplete dominant combos out there that are popping like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then compare that to like a triple recessive three gene combo. I mean, price wise, not even the same, but you could do a lot with that little, you know, three gene animal that's banging, right? And it could do a lot for your collection. So,
well, and I think if you were to go out on the street and find random people and say, I'm going to show you, you know, five snakes, and you showed them pictures of different snakes, you'd be surprised what people like that aren't expensive snakes per se. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's why in another podcast I did a while ago, I forget which one, but I was talking about one of the things I'd like to see developed in this industry are actual snake shows.
Yeah. Okay. Like they have over in Indonesia where like you get an award, like
best
show or,
yeah, you know, I mean, we had best booth and best display and stuff like that at the one show we had up here. But, and one year we had, you know, best snake, but people knew who owned the snake. The way I want it
there
is exactly. So the way I want to do it is you put, so it could be categories. It can be recessives. It can be, you know, incomplete dominant and dominant genes.
Yeah. Break it down, you know, kind of like the dog
break
world,
it down. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Like you have sporting, you have non-sporting.
Yeah. And you could have crowd favorites, and you can have the ones that are actually judged, you know, by different judges.
Good.
And, you know, I think that would be cool.
I do too, actually. I really do think that would be cool. When I kind of stepped away. Oh, go ahead, Shin. Sorry.
I think something like that would help bring like the art aspect back to our breeding plans. Cause something I noticed from going to a show in Canada and then seeing the shows in America is like the Canadian show, the animals look better. I ain't gonna lie. I mean, down here, it's a bunch of quad heads that maybe have inchy or something, but up there, there's still like beautiful snakes on a lot of those tables. You know, there's still art going on in Canada, I should say.
Well, I, you know, we have to work harder to get people to pay attention because, I mean, the United States has been known as the leader, you know, in the ball python industry. But I would say that other countries are quickly catching up, and they're catching up because, you know, they have chosen a different route, a different lane, a different highway, or a different back road or whatever to get to where they're going. I mean, you can take Europe, you can take, you know, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, all the different countries in Europe. And, you know, we all bring something to the plate, but, you know, we've always had an inferiority complex because we're not from the, you know, United States, and the United States really is who invented this, right? It's like the Japanese who invented the koi thing, the koi industry. Americans did invent, you know, our great forefathers of the industry, the Brian Barcheks and, you know, Nerd and Barkers, Ralph Davis, Pete Call, you know, many of Mark Bailey, Mark and Kim Bailey. I mean, there's so many that really, you know, set the path, set the prices of these animals where, you know, most people that don't know anything about snakes, they go, when you tell them what some of them have sold for, they're, you know, they can't believe it.
At my day job, my boss still, he doesn't believe it. He's like,
yeah.
I'll show him like Morph Market every once in a while. And I'll be like, look at that. And he's like, no way somebody's paying that much for something that just poops and eats. And I'm like, they do. They like it.
Yeah. Well, pretty much everything alive poops and eats. And
he's a good guy. He's a good guy. He's from Texas, but he says some
funny stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Where are you located, Adam?
Ventura, California.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So kind of a little bit below like Santa Barbara and above LA is where Ventura is.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Cool.
On the coast. Yeah.
Ironically, that's where I was born and raised. And
okay. Yeah. Yeah. I remember you telling me you were from California originally and then you moved to Tennessee.
Yeah. 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 Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah. Did you get those tickets yet that I told you to get?
No, they're in my car. I'll talk to you off air about them, but yeah, there's whatever.
Okay.
You know, my wife's been texting me here and there. She's been throwing a lot of good questions, and she actually had one that I think is relevant a little bit to what we were talking about. I know we're coming up. Shane and I like to keep it to about an hour. We like to be respectful of everybody's time, but
yeah,
you're a good conversation. So if we go a little over, I'm okay with that if Shane is too. But shed testing, what's your opinion on shed testing? Do you think it's helped us? Is it,
what's your opinion? Why not? I mean, technology, you can't beat back technology, right?
Yep.
And it's there. So yeah, let's use it. You know, one thing it will do is it will prevent people from selling you an animal that is not what it's supposed to be.
Right.
And that, I thought that's happened a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Okay. And I've gotten snakes back in the day from big name breeders that never ended up being what they were, you know?
Right.
And they somehow made it right. Not the way it should have been made right, but you know, it was, well, it's got this stripe, so it must be this, even though it was a 50, you know?
Right.
They claimed it was a full. So, you know, I originally there were some people that were very much against shed testing. They thought, you know, it would change the game. People wouldn't have to work so hard. But in a way, it's allowed us to hit our mark quicker and have less
byproduct
that you can't do anything with, right? So I think it's a good thing. You know, you can't argue with technology, really.
Yeah.
It's coming and it's here and it's gonna, even more is gonna come.
Right.
Has it changed your breeding strategy or your pairings? Like, do you make pairings with the intention of like, oh, I'll test out this clutch for whatever hat?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. A few. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've got a few, you know, so for example, I've got, I think an Enchi Pastel, Desert Ghost Stranger Het Clown, which was shed tested to be Het Clown. I bought it from Bob Vu. So everything I breed it to is 50% Het Clown. And I went out and shed tested those to, because, you know, the difference between it being the offspring being Het Clown or not Het Clown makes a, you know, it cost me $50 for a shed test and probably it's worth at least another $500, right? In the value of the snake, if it's the right combination. So
do you put that into your equation kind of like, hey, if I do test and you know, it only bumps it like 150 or whatever, is it worth it for me?
Well, I want to be able to tell the customer it is what it is, you know, unless it's something like, you know, a recessive that really they don't care if they hit. You know, like some people don't want to have pieds anymore. I don't know why, but that's, you know, personal choice. So if it's 50% head pied, it's makes no difference to them whether it's het pied or 50% het pied.
Right. Okay. So do you then, discuss it more or less with the customer, or are you preemptively testing?
I'm preemptively testing. Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And if I have a snake that is, you know, somebody comes along and says, oh, I want to, you know, get this snake from, they see it. And I go, well, it's 50% het clown. You know, I might say, okay, is this price now? But if I do get it shed tested and it comes out as het clown, it's going to bump up. So you can buy it for this price now, or, you know.
Or we throw the dice.
Right? Or we throw the dice, you know, which is right. What we did a lot of the times, right? We threw the dice. We're always throwing the dice when we're doing different combinations to see what we're going to get.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's maybe some of the, I wouldn't say negative, but some of, you know, some of the things that you hear people talk about with shed testing is, oh, I miss those days, right? Where it was like, hey, man, you got to breed it out and do it. And I can understand that, because that was fun. You put the two paw sets together and you strike it and you're like, holy cow. Wow. You know, but at same time, I kind of like where we are progressing, utilizing technology to pinpoint, become more focused, not creating byproduct, which unfortunately, like, you know, a lot of people just look as like lesser than of a thing than what they were going for. And that's not what we should be doing. We're caring for these animals. We're producing them. A normal or a 20 gene freaking animal gets the same care. Should have that same opportunity at life.
Oh, they get the same care, the same food, the same, you know, housing, the same everything. You know, there's an argument that you can say, you know, it costs just as much to, you know, feed a great horse as it is to feed a bad horse, you know, but to me, I just think if it's living and you're responsible for it, it should be given the same care as your best.
Right.
I agree. Right. I mean, that's what we're doing.
We're playing with lives.
Right. Right.
It's, how lucky are we?
Right.
That we get to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
There has to be a huge respect level that's always maintained with this. Yeah, man, for sure. Well, Shane, what else? Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm not ready to go yet, guys. I'm sorry. I just peeked at the score.
Yeah. Do we need to drag this out a little more for you?
Okay, so they won the first game 6-2, Maple Leafs, which is one of the original six NHL hockey teams, right?
Right on. Bit of history there. Cool.
Bit of history, Maple Leafs. And so they won 6-2. Then they won in overtime the second game. And they won again tonight. Three in a row. They got one more. They won in overtime. Anyways, so what were we talking about?
Well, I had a question, a little bit of backtracking, a little bit.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah.
I know that you do some business overseas. Are there markets down right now too? Or are they like thriving, or? How's it going in the overseas market?
Well, you got to look at over there. And when I'm talking overseas, I mean, I just did do a shipment to UK. And then I shipped to Japan, South Korea. You know, we live in a country where we live in big houses and have lots of space. Most of us have that opportunity. Okay.
Right.
They live in tiny little places over in Japan, apartments, whatever. In England, it's, you know, huge population, small spaces, unless you're Scott Wilkinson and you live in a big honking mansion. And it's not that big, but it's beautiful. Anyway, so these pets are the best pets or animals to keep in a small environment, because they don't wake up the neighbors.
Right. They don't barking.
No barking. No, they don't smell. Okay, unless you're breeding rats, but why would you in a small place? And it's not like you have to take them for walks and explain yourself in the elevator as you're going down holding your snake with a collar around its neck. I'm going to take it for a bit of a crawl. You know, and if you take a regular dog kennel, which might be 3 feet by 2 feet, okay, and we don't have our, we have German Shepherds. We used to have, you know, dog crates for them because it gives them that their own space, but they don't have that anymore. But you take that space, you can hold, you know, 10 adult snakes in that footprint.
Right.
Right. So even a collector, even somebody that just wants beautiful animals, just wants to own them, in a very small space can own 10 to 20, 24 snakes. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I first got into this, I was heavily into the horse business, helping a friend out. He had a world champion stallion that he was standing, and I was doing all the promotion work for him and that. And I discovered these snakes. And when I wanted to buy my first snakes, I didn't have enough money to do it. So I asked him, he was rich and a super nice guy. And I said, look, do you want to invest? And if you do, I'll double your money. Okay. In a year. And he said, really? I said, yeah, I will double your money. And he ended up loaning me $5,000. And with that, I bought a pastel jungle male and I think 11 normal females, normals. Okay.
Okay.
But that it came to $8,500 US. And instead of him giving me all the money, I put the rest on credit cards. And he loaned me $5,000. And he said to me, why snakes? And I said, well, I'll tell you why. If you have 100 people in a room and you say, okay, how many people in this room want to own a dog? You'd get 50, 60% putting up their hand. Okay, how many people here want to own a cat? You know, 50, 60%. How many people want to own a horse? You'd get maybe 10%. How many people want to own a snake? You might get 2%. Right. The difference being is that 2% might own 20, 30, 40, 100 snakes. The horse guy will own one horse. The dog guy might have two.
Cat people like 15.
Cat people. They're a little crazy.
Yeah.
They're a little crazy. If there's any cat people out there,
we apologize.
I'm being dead serious. Dead serious. You're absolutely crazy people. No. I had a cat. My cat just died after 18 years. Oh, it was devastating. Devastating.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. This last year we had to put down both of ours within about 6 months of each other, and they were about 18, almost 19.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
They're part of the family.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So anyways, I don't think cat people are crazy.
No, I don't think so. But they're fun to take jabs at, you know.
Cat women are crazy. Cat women. I'm just kidding.
Oh, no. No, joking.
I have two of my cats that are no longer with us tattooed. Uh-huh. I have their names tattooed on me.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, I love my animals, no matter what form they are.
I like animals more than I like humans. No offense, but they're way more consistent as far as, you know, and loyal. Oh, my God.
Loyal. Yes.
It's incredible, right?
Yeah, to the death. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people, you know, they're all right every once in a while. You two are all right every once in a while.
In short,
Mark's one of my favorite ones, man. Yeah.
I appreciate that, Shane. Yeah. It was fun spending time with you up here and hearing what you had to say about Canada.
Oh, I love Canada. Canada, and I love Timmy's, man. Timmy's is the best. I love Tim Hortons coffee. It blows Starbucks out of the water, man.
Yeah, I'm not a Starbucks guy. I find it way overpriced for what you get. And
oh, man, huge. Their coffee's not that good.
And it's not. Yeah, no. It really isn't. Really isn't. Yeah, Timmy's is good. I like it.
Fun fact, ever since I came back, I only drink Timmy's coffee. I order it on Amazon and get it delivered, and that's what's made in this house from here on out. Like, we only drink Timmy's here.
Okay, so besides my absolutely fabulous focaccia sandwich I made for you, what was your best thing? What did you enjoy eating the most up here? And were you surprised by the diversity in food?
Oh, that's what I was most surprised about, was just the overall diversity of the Toronto area. I was thinking I was going up there with like Ice Road Truckers and Moose were going to be, is it Meese or Moose? But I don't know. Multiple Moose would be running around and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't anything like that. It was totally different. It was like a metropolitan, but food. I liked Charles' place down there on the river or the lake, whatever that was.
The lake. Yeah, that was a lake.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was, he had a, man, he brought us all kinds of stuff. There was so much.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. He's a very cool guy, yeah.
Oh, but no, the Keg, the Keg restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great, too. Everywhere you went, St. Lawrence Market, there was the food in Canada.
Good food everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, you didn't really get to experience the diversity of food in Toronto in particular. I mean, there's different sections of, there's a Greek section, Chinese section. I mean, you name it. And it's all about the food. That's one thing why I like multiculturalism is because they bring the food.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like Turkish food and the Indian food, curry food, Thai food. Oh, I love
food. Here in Ventura, we have so many Thai restaurants. I mean, I love it because I love Thai food, but it is funny when people come to Ventura and they're like, where are we going to go eat? And I'm like, well, you like Thai food? Yeah, not really. And I'm like, well, then I don't know.
Yeah, that's all we have. Yeah, no, we've got everything. We literally have everything here, which is great.
Ah, nice, nice, nice.
Yeah.
So, wait, we got our first segment ever. Please hold. All right, Mark, I'm calling on you. What is our pro tip of the week? For words of wisdom and stuff to live by or breed by.
Oh, I've got so many. Have we got another hour? I've said this so many times. Grow into business, don't go into business.
All right. I like
it. There it is. That's the pro tip of the week.
Yeah, grow into it. Don't go into it. Yeah.
And you spoke on that, on those terms earlier about, you know, not overproducing as a smaller breeder, putting yourself in a position where you have to auction off a bunch of stuff just to make room, and it all fits. So thank you for that, Mark.
You're welcome. Anytime. I feel honored to be on. Is this your first or second show back?
Well, it's technically second, but you're our first interview.
Okay, well, perfect. Yeah. I appreciate that. I really do. Man. And I like the way everything looks.
Oh, thanks. We're getting it dialed in still. But, you know, part of the kind of growing pains.
Green line morphs. Yeah.
All of his help. He did it all. That you see the background.
I like what you did, Shane, back there with the lighting and the textured wall. And now, was that already there, or did you go out and get that textured wall?
I bought those 3D things on Amazon.
Okay. And I did as well. The background here, you'll see.
Yeah.
No, it was cool.
I believe so. Fun fact, me and Mark were talking on the phone. We were both kind of building a room around the same time, but we didn't see each other doing any of it. So Mark's came out his way and mine came out this way.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so, yeah,
I like it. I've only got my snakes behind me. I'm not.
Yeah, catch up, you know? A little bit boring there, Adam.
Sorry.
Just saying.
Try it up again.
A little, guys. Little predictable.
Oh, God.
It's they're the okay. best snakes ever, though.
Yeah. It's okay. Thanks, oh, guys. What is it you do, Adam? I see a snake in the background. What? Oh, okay.
No, no, no. We're here to talk about dog showing, actually.
Yes.
So
yes. The Westminster Dog Show. Let's go there.
Right. Hey, yeah. My wife and I will be going there.
I understood you bred dogs.
Yeah. So,
and showed dogs. You showed dogs.
Show dogs, yes. And we miniature bull terriers.
Okay.
So Spud McKenzie, you know, and
the ones with their nose that kind of, and they're white.
The target
and
dog
kind of slope. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Eggheads is what we call them, right? Their head kind of looks like an egg.
Are they intelligent dogs?
Extremely so. They're an operant breed. So their initial breeding purpose was ratting with some fighting and to be able to be let out on a farm and go do their job, come back at night and hang out with the family. That was considered the perfect thing, right? So family dog, and things like that. They're clowns. They're known as the clowns of the canine world. And they truly are. They're goofballs. Oh, audacious balls. No kidding.
Yeah.
Fourth litter on the ground. Congratulations, man. Wow. That's pretty cool. Huh, I'll have to hit you up. We'll talk. We know a lot of the full standard BT people.
Oh, yeah.
So we do the minis. They're not, it's not like poodles where you have like different sizes of poodles that are all kind of related. The miniature bull terrier and the bull terrier are two separate breeds. We're kind of like cousins, basically, is the easiest way to think about
it.
Size difference is like 35 40 pounds for a 25 to 35 pounds for a mini and 50 to 80 pounds for a standard. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I've got German Shepherds. I've got long coat German Shepherds. I did some showing, but not confirmation showing. It was the German Schützend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's another story.
Yeah. Another story for another time. Maybe we'll have you on here down the road and talk a little more about that type of stuff too. But dog breeding's fun, man. You know?
Yeah, it is. It is. I love breeding things and seeing the outcome and stuff. I mean, there's nothing better to breed than snakes, in my opinion. In all the years I've been, you know, dabbling, whether it's horses or dogs or fish or whatever, nothing beats reptiles.
I agree.
Nothing. No,
I don't know, man. I like breeding humans a lot, though, too. I mean, that's...
I was going to say, the color behind you, is this going to become a sex advice show after when so after dark with
with Shane and Adam?
Shane Kelly. Yeah, Shane and Adam. We're going to be giving sex advice.
Pro tip. Pro tip. night. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mark.
There's double meaning in that pro tip thing, I think. Okay, you got me on that.
You have to tune in to find out.
Yeah. Hey, here's an interesting fact. Talking about pro tips, my last name is Mandic. And some people think that's a strange name, but it's actually pronounced Mandic. Which is from old Yugoslavia. My family comes from the Croatia, Montenegro area. My father, who was the Mandic. I recently found out, I was doing some research on Nikola Tesla. Do you know who Nikola Tesla is?
Oh, yeah. Big
yeah.
Guy.
Yeah. His mother was a Mandic.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. From the same area my family's from. So I could be related.
maybe some, yeah, distance.
Somewhere along really there. Cool. But yeah, I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, that's way cool. Huh. Man, I don't have anything cool like that in my history.
Nothing.
So my last name, Halbleib, translates to half bread, half body.
Okay.
There is a town of Halbleib over in Germany.
Yeah, I was going to say Germany.
Yep. It is German. And somehow we're all kind of like, because it's a small family line. So we all go back and, you know, we are all related somewhere. But the United States part of our family, once they came over, lost contact with the German side. So we haven't talked to them in a long time.
And when did they come over?
So let's see. What year was that? That Otto, great grandpa Otto came over. I think it was around 19. So my Italian side came over in 1911, and the German side, I think, came around like 1915 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So a lot of history there.
Yeah, definitely a lot of history towards the Illinois area. And then, so, yeah.
And Shane, you're, I'm going to say, either Irish.
Yes, sir.
Is that, yeah? Okay, I'm accurate there. Okay.
I'm just like a Celtic mutt. If you look at ancestry, it's like Scottish, Irish, Welsh, just whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of history there too. So we're all a byproduct of immigrants to North America.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm an immigrant myself. I moved here from Australia.
Oh, okay. What age were you when you moved over?
Five.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you gone back?
Crikey. I haven't. No, I haven't. I haven't gone back. I haven't even put a shrimp on the Barbie. We came over in a ocean liner. It was called the SS Canberra. And it was the ship actually used during the Falkland War. I don't know if you remember the Falkland War.
Yeah.
Who was that with? Argentina?
Yes, that was Argentina.
Yeah.
And yep.
So that's where everybody was kind of lived on the SS Canberra. They recommissioned it after many, many years. We came over in 1962. I had an affair with a hula dancer while I was on that cruise. I tracked her down. Well, I saw her dance and I thought, I got to get to know this woman, you know? So I found
back
her.
To my pro tip that breathing humans is the best.
I went and knocked on her door, a little 5-year-old kid with an Australian accent, asked her if she'd come out and play. And she did. That was my first love affair.
Man, look at that. You're breeding at like 4 months old, basically.
No, I wasn't breeding. I went to a Catholic school. They taught you all kinds of stuff that wasn't true about, you know.
Yeah, I grew up Mormon, so I understand. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There you go. Anyhow, you know what? We should get wrapping up. We're venturing into unknown, you know, territory right now.
Yeah, we could have a fun time talking about all kinds of stuff.
Right? But again, sir, I do appreciate hang out on the line with us for a little bit.
Yeah,
after,
I will.
After we end
I will
here.
For sure.
And everybody else, Shane and I, truthfully, we really appreciate you guys stopping by, commenting in chat. Thanks, Jay, again, for all the awesome designs and everything, my friend. Really, really, truly appreciate all your effort. All right, y'all, have a good night. Go ahead and end it.